Let your light so shine before others that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. We gather at the Lord's table in this sacred space, in this holy moment, gathered together in a communion meditation, reflecting in these weeks upon our Lord's Sermon on the Mount. James Baldwin sharply warned us, did he not, of the death of the heart. He warned us as individuals and as a people, the danger of the death of the heart. Together to journey through and to face down that and other dangers, we come to the Lord's table today and meditate together. Today we launch one of our members, this Marsh Chapel, a heart in the heart of the city and a service in the service of the city. Its ministry focused on voice and vocation and volume is both a landing pad and a launching pad, both a place to enter and a place to exit. And so after some many years of regular attendance, leadership, and service, our own Reverend Holly Bensonhaver will be journeying not too far away to serve in ministry at the First Baptist Church of Needham. Through these years, she has guided by her presence the entry into our worship service. 20 minutes before worship, some half or a dozen of us gather in quiet. Holly has led us. We pause for prayer. Holly, by example, precept and example, has led us. And so we send her off with our blessing. Take good wishes. Take our greetings to our neighbors to the west. Most of our neighbors are somewhere to the west. We wish you Godspeed. The ministry of a chapel like Marsh Chapel includes receiving and sending, and it requires among the congregation a certain sturdiness, a willingness to see and to let go, to receive and to let go. That is, we are those trying day by day not to forget but to remember. Our guide for a moment in this communion meditation regarding Matthew 5 will be one Amos Wilder. Before introducing him, though, let me say with you what we affirm together. You know, in Boston and in New England, we have the advantage of regular, daily, block-by-block reminders, don't we? In sign and symbol, in remembrance and landmark, of how this country, the land of the free and the home of the brave, was shaped and formed. It's all around us. For all of the imperfections, and there were many, those who came here, let us remember, who shaped and founded the land of the free and the home of the brave, were immigrants. Those who shaped and founded the land of the free and the home of the brave were immigrants. Fleeing religious persecution. Those who shaped the land of the free and the home of the brave were immigrants, fleeing religious persecution, seeking religious liberty. Those who shaped and founded the land of the free and the home of the brave were immigrants, fleeing religious persecution, seeking religious liberty, and desiring, however imperfectly, over time to expand that circle of freedom to include others most all. Today we reflect upon the Sermon on the Mount. Let me introduce you to Amos Wilder, who combined a pastor's heart and a scholar's mind. Now, you may not know him so in the tradition of rhetoric, introducing the unfamiliar by the familiar. Let me share with you something about his brother, whom you may, or at least some may, remember. His brother was Thornton Wilder, who wrote a play, Our Town, that celebrates, as we do in this communion meditation, the goodness of life in every hour, in every moment, You remember Rebecca telling George about her friend Jane, who received a letter from Jane's minister that was addressed, Jane Crowfoot, Crowfoot Farm, Grover's Corners, Sutton County, New Hampshire, United States, and then also Western Hemisphere, Planet Earth, Solar System, Universe, Mind of God. And she said, they delivered it just the same. You remember Emily coming back against all warning, coming back from the grave to visit. She couldn't resist. Said those shades among her, with her, pick the most ordinary day in your life. It will be enough. It will be too much, the wonder of it. So she picks February 11th, 1899, her 12th birthday. There is breakfast and scuffles with her mother. Where's my blue ribbon? It's right next to you. If it were a snake, it would bite you. Mom, am I pretty? Pretty enough for all normal purposes? There's a birthday gift on the step from the boy next door. Father returning from Hamilton College. The policeman at 10 below zero walking the street. And she has that Saul Bellow moment. All of this is happening. Just for a moment, we're together. Let's look at one another. Clocks ticking. Breakfast, coffee, mama, papa, this world, too wonderful for any to receive it. Thornton had a brother named Amos who had the same poet's heart. Amos became over time the quintessential Yankee scholar of the New Testament. He combined a ministerial imagination with an academic proclivity. He combined mind with heart, reason with imagination, science with humanity. With his family, he traveled from China to California, then educated at Oberlin and Mansfield College, later at Yale, and taught for many of his mature years here across the river at Harvard Divinity School. He had a capacity to unite the pair so long disjoined. Now, Amos took something from his brother and much more from his colleague over the years, Albert Schweitzer, whose rendering of the New Testament and the Sermon on the Mount in particular. Amos brought in his Yankee voice to us in the middle of the last century and beyond. He began as a pastor. He began with the experience of ministry in North Conway in a little congregational parsonage. I'm going to invite our dear senior, Casey Schultz, to come and read for a moment. You know Casey. She's been with us 4 years in ministry among the Lutherans and all. We're sending her forth, speaking of launching and landing pads, in a few months. She will expand, perhaps, her circle of leadership and service. You just watch and you just wait. Her poem is a difficult one, Amos remembering a modest wedding of a poor couple alone in the parsonage in North Conway with the snow falling decades ago.
Brother and sister in this world's poor family, Jack and Jill out of this gypsy camp of earth, here is where the injustice is greatest, and you feel it obscurely. And you have a right to storm within yourselves and seek sanctuary in one another's shabbiness. This boy and this girl, with all their abandonment and futility, folly and dereliction, whirled from ignominy to ignominy, condemned to all the wretched chores of the community. O tribute of forlorn humanity, come for this benediction whom they have blasphemed, and somehow sense that they touch what? God the higher, all that they have missed, innocence and mercy and compassion. Poor lad, scoured from humiliation to humiliation, pressed by dirt and danger, squalor and exhaustion, and bred in blasphemy and the poison of men's bitter spirit and the maudlin imaginations of their lust. Where else could it end but in this makeshift marriage? And well may you storm within yourself at the same time that you feel the awe of it. God and the devil both have a hand in joining you, and you are hardly at fault. Poor sister in our earth's poor family, stupid and stupefied and hallowed all at once. Poor creature of poor moments, disinherited Eve, how else could it come out but in the tumble of that first assault? And yet God has put his finger on even this. No bridesmaids nor flowers for you. The groom hasn't given you these. You came in an old coat. One of the gang is best man and witness. The boy minister goes through with it, and there is no shower as you go out. The sleigh waits outside in the heavy snowfall. It is movie night in the village, and no one is about to spy you at the parsonage, and so you go off in the blizzard to the lumber camps. This is all the world gives you. But the Son of Man of the wedding feast haunts such occasions and understands you. He can turn water into wine and such shame and loss into gain in some world, sometime. Lucy Hanks bore Nancy 7 years before her marriage feast. The Son of Man knows too well what the hells are and the dumb wanderings and sicknesses of the soul, and he is the only one who does know. So endure these gusts and whirlwinds of the night until the morning breaks. I heard the organ roll behind the snowfall and saw in it the confetti of the heavenly bride chamber, glimpsed the sons of the bride chamber rejoicing in that city which is full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof, before the Father whose face the angels of little children do always behold.
I heard the organ roll behind the snowfall. For those ourselves and others who have invested much, not all, but much of ministry among the rural poor, not in Vermont and New Hampshire, but in the farthest reaches along the Canadian border of northern upstate New York, Amos Wilder's Parsonage Pastoral Imagination feeds and guides. In baptism, we are given the gift of ministry. And in baptism, we are given the graces to carry out our different varied forms of ministry. Amos Wilder then moved from his work in North Conway to study and to teaching, and he helps us, perhaps as well as any, to enter in the next several weeks the Sermon on the Mount. You know, something that's been away, that's been in the freezer, we will say, for 2,000 years, like one of the gospel texts. If you're going to serve it, you want to do more than pull it out, let it thaw, and eat it raw. You need to prepare it. It needs to be seasoned. It needs to be warmed. It needs to be cooked. It needs to be presented, understood. And Amos Wilder, not alone, but preeminently for his time, understood these texts in their context. With Albert Schweitzer, he understood the Sermon on the Mount to be a teaching ad interim in the context of Matthew first and the remembrance of Jesus second. And the interim being the expectation that soon and very soon the end was here. Not sometime in the far distant future, but Thursday at lunch or Friday in the morning. And so these teachings, with such an imminent expectation, took on, as you heard read earlier, a very fierce, a very excessive teaching. And Amos Wilder, relying on others, understood them to be so, ad interim. That is, that they fit the time of Matthew's church and the teaching of Jesus with the disciples, but they guide us. They don't direct us. They guide us. And we in our time have the staggering responsibility and the awesome freedom both to interpret these holy words of ancient writ for our time. My colleague, Brother Larry Whitney, will read with you and for you just a paragraph of Amos Wilder's teaching, relying on Schweitzer, about the Sermon on the Mount.
Jesus meant the requirements very explicitly. But the radical formulation of the requirements is to be explained by the imminence of the kingdom of God. The judgment was immediately at hand, and an extraordinary ethic was proper for an extraordinary emergency. We have then, in Schweitzer's term, interim ethics, immediately relevant only to Jesus' disciples in the brief period before the end. His insight that the teaching is significantly governed by the drawing near of the new age is today generally accepted. The teaching comes out of a small world, a rural and small town society of a comparatively simple kind, in a semi-tropical climate. As did Matthew, we are under obligation to appropriate Jesus' words in a free and responsible way, applying them to our own situation, bearing in mind the disparity between his situation and ours.
Such a staggering responsibility, such an awesome freedom. Beloved, we gather in a moment at the Lord's table. We come together to this table to experience thanksgiving and remembrance and presence. We come together to enjoy a sense of belonging, to enjoy an intimation of meeting, to enjoy a shared experience of fellowship, to be in communion, meditation with bread and with cup. The first role of the church is not to speak, but to be the church where daily object lessons in faith and life are taught almost randomly in the community. The gospel is not good advice, it is good news. So we come, ready to receive, here together, at the table of love. Let us break bread together on our knees.